Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing pregnancy supplements and asking the question, how much is too much? It follows a new study which is summarised in Insight Plus, which says clinicians need to reconsider widespread prescriptions for pregnancy supplements and instead promote whole food diets in pregnancy. The two guests who worked on the research join me now. Dr. Linda Gallo is a physiologist and lecturer in the School of Health at the University of the Sunshine Coast, with research interests in nutrition and cardiometabolic disease. And Associate Professor Shelley Wilkinson is an advanced accredited practicing dietitian and is a project officer in the Department of Obstetric Medicine at the Mater Mothers Hospitals and director and principal dietitian at Lifestyle Maternity. Dr. Gallo and Associate Professor Wilkinson, thank you both so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Thanks, Sam. It's great to be here.
Before we dive into your recent research, can you both give me a little bit of an idea about your background and your passion for this topic? Associate Professor Wilkinson, I'll start with you.
Thank you, Sam. So I've been a dietitian for many years and started doing research in the maternity space when I did my PhD in psychology starting in 2006. And then more recently, I've been running my own telehealth private practice in this area using both of these skills. And whichever hat I'm wearing, whether it's at the university or the hospital, my private practice, I really have a passion that understanding what works for women and ensuring they receive the best care through applying the evidence base in addressing their needs.
And Dr. Gallo?
So I have a PhD in developmental physiology. I'm interested in early life exposures and its impact on lifelong health. I have a particular interest in nutrition, and my passion for this topic on nutrition in pregnancy really commenced during my PhD, but also when I was pregnant myself with my first child about 6 years ago and the personal experiences that I had.
Okay, so let's talk about pregnancy supplements. Associate Professor Wilkinson, what are they and why are they so popular in high-income countries?
I call these the pink multivitamins in inverted commas. They contain an alphabet of vitamins and minerals and are generally promoted as a good insurance policy to make up for what you're not eating in pregnancy and also when women are breastfeeding. And I think the fact that women are taking these, they're so popular, is because the marketing dollar is very, very convincing.
And Linda, what are the statistics around the taking of these supplements?
Yeah, so the use of prenatal multivitamins has really crept into practice over the last couple of decades. Over the last 10 to 15 years, I'd say, many studies from high-income countries, including our own study, have reported that about 80% of pregnant women will take multivitamins throughout pregnancy. And as Shelley mentioned, the reasons for this are multifactorial, but there is a strong marketing push, and prenatal multivitamins are also prescribed by many antenatal care providers. A recent Southeast Queensland study reported that pregnant women that take multivitamins are highly motivated to do so by the advice of doctors in particular.
But it sounds like women are taking more supplements than they need. Associate Professor Wilkinson, what are those two key essential ingredients?
Multivitamins are water soluble, so any excess comes out when we go to the toilet, so we call it expensive wee. So what is recommended for women is that they take a supplement of 400 micrograms. The majority of women should be taking 400 micrograms a day of folic acid in the month before conception and the first 3 months of pregnancy. And taking that folic acid supplement is probably the most well-known recommendation by healthcare professionals. It's known to reduce that chance of neural tube defects in the baby. And guidelines, this is one that's not as well known. So guidelines recommend pregnant women take an iodine supplement of 150 micrograms a day during pregnancy and breastfeeding. And some doctors recommend that women with a pre-existing thyroid disorder should seek medical advice first. So the iodine is interesting. Iodine is needed for growth and development, particularly of baby's brain. And mild iodine deficiency can lead to cognitive and neurological problems in the child, depending on the level of deficiency. And we know that Australian population is considered mildly iodine deficient. And this is more so in the southern states than up here where we are in Queensland. And it's based on the soil that vegetables are grown in. So depending on how depleted our soils are, we know they're not too good. It can influence the iodine in vegetables. Now, also, people sort of think, well, where has this come from? So in the inverted commas olden days, we used to get iodine from milk. So they used to clean milk vats with iodophores. They used to clean them out and they used to sterilize them, et cetera, et cetera. And a bit of iodine ended up in the milk. They changed the cleaning processes and now we don't get as much iodine as we used to. Other supplements might be required, but that needs to be tailored to a woman's needs or demonstrated deficiencies. And the common ones we often see are vitamin D, iron, maybe calcium and vitamin B12.
And Dr. Gallo, let's look at your research in more detail. It's published in Maternal and Child Nutrition, and it's called Dietary Supplements, Guideline Alignment and Biochemical Nutrient Status in Pregnancy, Findings from the Queensland Family Cohort Pilot Study. And one of your key findings is that 4 in 5 women were taking pregnancy supplements.
So, as you mentioned, our study was part of the Queensland Family Cohort, which is an ongoing prospective Australian longitudinal study, and it's aiming to understand factors that influence growth and well-being of children and their families throughout life. So we found 4 in 5 women were taking a multivitamin, and these stats are consistent with previous work. We wanted to look at the contribution of supplements versus diet to nutrient adequacy, which has not really been examined before. And we found that there was very high reliance on supplements to meet requirements for 3 key nutrients, and that's folic acid, iodine, and iron. So the majority of their intake for these nutrients was coming from supplements rather than food. These women who were taking the multivitamins, they were more likely to meet recommended levels for these nutrients if they took the multivitamin. But some of them were taking these nutrients, or the intake of these nutrients were well in excess, which raises concerns for not only this high reliance on prenatal supplements, but also placing some women at risk of excess intake. We also looked at the factors that are associated with multivitamin use, and it was quite interesting, although I suppose not surprising. Factors associated with higher income, so receiving private obstetric care, having private health insurance, and women who had greater alignment with meat guidelines, so consuming more meat in their diet, these women were more likely to report multivitamin use. From our study, we don't know what antenatal care providers were advising as such, but that's ultimately what we found in our study. So those factors associated with high income were more likely to be associated with high multivitamin use.
And Associate Professor Wilkinson, supplements are also taken by women to meet their own nutritional guidelines, since they're not necessarily eating enough of the 5 food groups.
We do see some of these requirements being met by supplements. However, we have a food first approach because there's so many other things that foods provide and also things that we don't know that food is providing. So the first guideline of the Australian Dietary Guideline is eat a wide variety of nutritious foods. We do know there's a lot of good things, but we also don't know everything that we don't know. So we say, keep it broad, go for food. And that's where you're going to get the best bang for your buck. Linda and I, with some other colleagues, did another study from this Queensland Family Cohort. And we looked at what women and their partners were eating around the end of the second trimester. And we saw poor dietary patterns. But it was disappointing, but not surprising, because it reflected the wider Australian population. So a third of the kilojoules, one bite in every 3, was coming from junk food, which was pushing out more nutritious food. So just over 10% of women were meeting their dairy group requirements. Just under 20% were meeting meat and alternative requirements. Only a quarter were meeting their vegetable requirements, and around 40% were meeting fruit recommendations, and fewer than 1% met their recommendations for breads and cereals and grains. Everyone's carb conscious, but unfortunately, by cutting out or reducing fruit, vegetable, and especially the grains and cereals, means that women's gut microbiome isn't maintained. Through the different fibers in these foods, we should be consuming sufficient to help support our healthy gut. We also know that from 2009, folic acid and iodine were used in fortification of breads and cereals and grains. And so by not consuming enough of this food group, women aren't getting enough of the nutrition from these groups.
Now, of course, there are dangers of exceeding recommended levels. Dr. Gallo, can you take me through the risks?
Previous studies have shown that multivitamin use may cause harm, such as gestational diabetes and the negative effects that are associated with gestational diabetes, such as offspring adiposity. Another study in 2018 showed that multivitamin use more than 5 times per week, compared with more moderate intake, like 3 to 5 times per week, was associated with an increased risk of autism spectrum disorder, which may potentially be linked to extremely high levels of maternal plasma folate and vitamin B12 levels. In terms of specific nutrients, it really depends on which nutrient is being taken in excess, because we obviously have to take into account dietary sources as well. But there is some evidence that exceeding folic acid, so the upper limit for folic acid, which is 1,000 micrograms per day, this can affect child cognitive outcomes, and very high blood levels can reduce birth weight and increase the risk of autism spectrum disorder as well. So high doses should really be avoided unless medically required. In terms of iodine, studies have reported both low and high iodine intake is associated with lower neurodevelopmental scores in children. And there is a really important ongoing Australian study looking at reducing iodine supplementation in women who meet iodine intake through dietary sources alone. And they will be looking at offspring outcomes to ensure that there are no negative effects of reducing supplemental iodine. And in terms of iron, that's another key one that is taken by the majority of women in supplement form. And this has been shown to increase the risk of hemoconcentration, so red blood cell concentration, which is associated with an increased risk of preterm birth, small for gestational age, low birth weight, preeclampsia, gestational diabetes.
Yeah, it really sounds like more is not better. Associate Professor Wilkinson, clinicians really need to be emphasising whole food diets.
That's right, Sam. So there's that food first approach. And sometimes people say, well, that's expensive. But promisingly, recent studies of the healthy shopping basket, when we look at how much things cost in the supermarket, have shown that healthier diets are actually cheaper than these ones full of ultra-processed foods. And more money can also be saved by just taking a supplement of iodine and folic acid rather than that horse-sized pill multivitamin that they're also generally twice the price of a simple supplement as well. And from work done by the Fruit and Vegetable Consortium, we know that if every Australian ate an extra serve of vegetables each day, we'd reduce the health budget by $1 billion over 5 years. So some simple changes can have wide-reaching effects.
And so, Dr. Gallo, it sounds like it's crucial for GPs and other clinicians to be encouraging mothers to be eating whole foods.
Yeah, that's right. And as I mentioned earlier, that's my research interest. So it's really important to consider whole foods as a primary source of nutrients. So it's quite ironic because the labels on the supplements do state that dietary supplements should not replace a balanced diet, but there's very little mention of diet in antenatal care clinics. There's a big focus on ensuring women are taking supplements. But there are benefits in whole foods that we just can't get from nutrients. So we do know that multivitamins may be appropriate for some people, and we're not saying that it doesn't have a place. We just like to see greater attention paid to food and seeing that women are eating a balanced diet, a variety of foods, and consider a multivitamin if there are signs that a range of nutritional needs are not being met.
That's right. And I think despite dietitians being seen as the food police, they're actually very skilled at tailoring these guidelines to people's individual circumstances and helping people overcome the issue that they have in front of them, whether it's taste, whether it's skills, whether it's interest, whether it's funding. Dietitians can work one-on-one or in groups with pregnant women to help them achieve a diet that's more aligned with the dietary guidelines. And as we mentioned, those first 1,000 days, what a woman is eating will be influencing her grandchild's health.
And finally, talk to me about the importance of women either trying to get pregnant or who are pregnant, getting the right kind of advice, because there's a lot of noise there on social media, people online telling you about the right things to do and the right supplements to take. So the right advice is really critical.
That's right. And I've got a major passion in this area as well. And I feel a lot of women and men and people who want to have a family are in a very vulnerable state sometimes if they're going through assisted reproductive technologies or if it's just wanting to fall pregnant naturally, getting into the right health, there's a lot of, dare I say, charlatans or people manipulating people's emotions. And really, it comes down to a very well-balanced diet and that supplementation again.
Associate Professor Shelley Wilkinson and Dr. Linda Gallo, thank you both so much for joining me.
Great to be with you this morning. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you, Sam. It was wonderful to be here.
My special guests have been Dr. Linda Gallo and Associate Professor Shelley Wilkinson. Dr. Linda Gallo is a physiologist and lecturer in the School of Health at the University of the Sunshine Coast with research interests in nutrition and cardiometabolic disease. Associate Professor Shelley Wilkinson is an advanced accredited practicing dietitian, a project officer in the Department of Obstetric Medicine at the Mater Mothers Hospitals, and director and principal dietitian at Lifestyle Maternity. You can read their article in Insight Plus by clicking the link in this description. Their study is published in Maternal and Child Nutrition. You can find more podcasts on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening.